Good. All right. We are good to go. And so we'll start basically on time and move on through for our hour and 15 minutes. My name is Mark Naylor. I'm not sure if you can see. Is that clear enough, that white on the light blue? That's not very clear. It's going to be like that throughout the... It's not very clear, and I'm really not going to be able to change that, but most of it will be a darker on the white, but this is not very clear. So that's my name, and then I have my email address up there, but if you want to contact me, you also have it on the handouts, and you can do that as well. I work for a Northwest Baptist Seminary and with Fellowship International, which is the mission arm of our Fellowship of Baptist Churches across Canada. So my role in that is the professional development of our missionary personnel around the world. So part of what I do is one of the aspects of missions that has been identified is in interpersonal relationships, because a lot of missionaries come home because of stress in that area. When you go cross-culturally, the stresses rise, and therefore the conflict that arises can create great havoc in the relationships of people come home. So that is where the focus is for where I'm coming from, is from that cross-cultural dynamic, the aspect of conflict in a lot of different areas, and how to resolve that conflict and how to lead to healthy relationships. So that's where I'm coming from with this seminar, which is on resolving conflict as a small group leader. So I'd like you to keep that in mind as you think about the application to a small group setting that you may be in, that you will need to do a lot of that application more yourself. The focus that I will be looking at is the actual conflict itself and the tools you use to resolve conflict. Now, if as we go along you have any kind of questions, any kind of comments, or you may want to raise a question about how that would relate in a small group context, please feel free to raise that question. And this goes the same with people who are looking online, that you can just type in your question. We have a tech person just waiting there to read your question, and we will be able to interact that way. So, let me begin then with prayer, as we take a look at this aspect of resolving conflict. Let's pray. Heavenly Father God, we thank you that you are a God who is all about reconciliation, and that you have called us to be reconcilers. I pray that our time together would be worthwhile as we think about the principles of resolving conflict, and that we might be your children in the way we would be peacemakers and the way we would deal with those aspects of conflict that would arise in all the different settings that we would be in. Pray these things in Jesus' name. Amen. Now, in a way, I should have called this managing conflict rather than resolving conflict, because sometimes the reality is that conflict cannot be resolved. But there are many tools that can be used that can manage conflict well and in many cases resolve it. It's very important to realize that there are times when conflict cannot be resolved to our satisfaction. That's just the reality of the world we live in, the relationships that we have. But what these tools that I'm going to introduce you to today will do is give you the best possible advantage in being able to resolve conflicts that come up. Now, at the outset, I do need to give a disclaimer. I am not teaching this course, I do not teach these things because I have been particularly good at resolving conflict throughout my life. In fact, I have been the opposite. And it wasn't until I began to realize how to resolve conflict, that there are actually tools and skills that a person can learn and practice, that I have become a lot better at it. So much so that people tell me that. They tell me, you were so much worse before, now you're better now. So you can see that there is a possibility of improvement. But I don't teach this because I'm particularly an expertise at this. I have lived most of my life either fighting or fleeing. If you've looked ahead about the key, about the natural tendencies of either silence or violence, fight or flight, that I have been an expert on those things rather than on really resolving conflict. As I look back on my years of ministry, I cringe at my lack of graciousness and my insensitivity to others and the way I have responded. I've been defensive. I've allowed my emotions to affect my interactions so that I deliberately hurt people or belittle people. I would also, there would be tensions and I would ignore them and just try to control the situation and move on and pretend that it would go away. Those are the sort of things that we want to not do, and we want to learn how to deal with them. And they are hard to deal with, but it is possible to do so. And I'm a living example of how it is possible to improve. Although, you know, keep in mind when I talk this way, you're talking like a scale from 1 to 10, and I probably climb from a 1 to a 3. So I feel like I'm doing good, okay? So there are people who can do this way better than I can. But I have learned an awful lot and seen these principles being applied in many different situations, and they work. They are real. It is really possible to learn how to be skillful, have the right tools in order to deal with a conflict situation, and we'll get to some illustrations about that as well. So I'm not a model for this, but I am, by God's grace, able to say that these tools and these skills do work. If I had been able to develop the skills sooner, it would have saved me and others a lot of grief. So I would say that these skills need to be learned well. For anyone who's in leadership, anyone who's in a relationship needs to learn these skills well, because that is key to good relationships. And I hope that they will prove valuable to you in your interpersonal relationships and in your small group settings. Now, what I would like you to do before we get started, I'd like you to take a minute, and on the back of a piece of paper or something like that, I would like you to write down a relationship issue in your church or in your small group or in your interpersonal relationships that you would find uncomfortable, or it would be very sensitive or difficult to address. Some situation either in the past or something going on right now, that if you are told you had to go and talk to this person and address that situation, that would be very difficult, very sensitive. Or maybe it's an issue that you just haven't had the courage to address. Maybe it's within your family, with your kids, or something like that. And you just haven't had the courage, or your brother or sister, somebody that you just don't talk about this issue. And what I would like you to do is write something like that down, give you a minute to do so, and think about that as we go through these principles. Do you have a real life scenario in your mind that you can think about as we address these principles? Think about, how would I use these principles to address that issue? I'll give you a minute to do that. Anybody having difficulty thinking of something? No? Everybody's living with conflict? All right, well, that's good for my future security in my teaching career. Well, let's see if we can resolve that. All right, let's start then. Oh, I want to give this too, just to say what this course is about. That's pretty clear, right? That blue part, you can read that okay? It says the biblical mandate, this is what this seminar is about, is the biblical mandate of becoming ministers of reconciliation is examined as an important skill for small group leaders. Following Patterson, it is proposed that dialogue is the primary skill that leverages conflict towards healthy relationships. Disciplines such as Start with Heart and tools such as Make It Safe required to create a context conducive to healthy dialogue are introduced. So that's basically a broad overview of what we will be covering. And that, unfortunately, is not on your handout, that thing, but it should be somewhere in your materials. That should have been written down. Okay, well, let's start with the biblical mandate. The concept of being ministers of reconciliation. Let me read that passage, 2 Corinthians 5, 16 to 19, where it says this. Paul is writing, and he says, "So from now on, we regard no one from a worldly point of view. Though we once regarded Christ in this way, we do so no longer." In other words, he's saying we have a whole different orientation with how we view relationships. And that orientation of how we do relationships from now on is like this, Christ-centered. That's what he's saying. "Therefore, if anyone is in Christ, the new creation has come. The old has gone. The new is here. There is a new way of living life." What is it based on? He says, "All this is from God, who reconciled us to himself through Christ and gave us the ministry of reconciliation." So God sets the example. He's the model in Christ, reconciling us to God. That's the key point of history, the key point of relationship, the key point of being human is our connection to God, that reconciliation that has occurred. Because of that, says Paul, God has now given us a ministry of reconciliation, bringing people back together. He says in verse 19 that God was reconciling the world to himself in Christ, not counting people's sins against them, and he has committed to us the message of reconciliation. We are therefore Christ's ambassadors, as though God were making his appeal through us. And what he's talking about here is basically that we are ministers of this reconciliation, of reconciling people to God. But this reconciliation aspect is broader than just giving the evangelistic message. It is actually being people who are reconcilers, people who bring healing to broken relationships. We are called to be that as we are followers of Christ. So this aspect of being reconciled, he says, "First of all, we implore you on Christ's behalf, be reconciled to God." That is the first major point, is that we are to be reconciled with God. But then we are reconcilers in the world as well. So if we go over to a passage, say, as Matthew 5:9, where Jesus says, "Blessed are the peacemakers, for they shall be called the children of God." It is the children of God are peacemakers. We are reconcilers. We bring healing because we are connected to Christ. It is Christ that has reconciled to us to God and given us that message and that ministry of reconciliation. Now, to do that, when we are not part of the problem, is really not that hard. And you all had experience of do that. Two people are upset with each other. You've been able to come in and you've been able to reconcile that. The difficulty comes is when we are part of the problem and we are on the hot seat. Then how do we control things? How do we control ourselves? How do we respond in ways that bring about reconciliation when we are part of the problem? That is the hard part. When we are on the hot seat, it is difficult. When we're not on the hot seat, we're not uncomfortable. We don't feel wounded or angry or hurt or bitter. But when we are, then those emotions, those things work within us and make it difficult for us to respond well. So how can we deal with that? I'm sorry, I forgot to bring any water. Is there water like handy right close by? Thanks, Wilson. I'm not going to make it unless I get something to drink. What I'm suggesting from this and from this passage and from this perspective is that we are not given the option to ignore tensions in our relationship. We don't have that option as followers of Christ. It's not a virtue to let frictions continue in relationships. They need to be dealt with. In fact, I would suggest that in your small group, conflicts are not an interruption to the ministry of or the task of your small group, but the conflicts are the ministry of your small groups. When conflicts happen, that's when ministry is at its peak. That is when your opportunity to minister and be ministers of reconciliation, as we're called to be, that's when God has given you that highest opportunity. The conflicts are the ministry. What do you think of that statement? I did see some nods around the room. Does anybody disagree with that? Does anybody want to comment on that? Does anybody agree with that? Sure, go ahead. Yes.
Is there ever a time when the conflict, the interpersonal conflict, is derailing the overall ministry of reconciliation and to God?
Well, that's a very interesting question. The idea is it possible that there could be some sort of conflict that actually is derailing the actual reconciliation effort that is occurring?
Of man to God,
as human beings to God, is there conflict that undermines that? And I would say, well, for sure, that is definitely a major part of this. Is that when we see that there are conflicts, there are issues that are keeping people from being reconciled to God, then that is another call for us to be the people who step in, help resolve that conflict so that the way can be open for them to see reconciliation with God. Is that what you're thinking of? Yeah. Yeah, definitely. Good. Okay. This is what I'm going to be talking about. Yeah, go ahead. Take the chair there. There's some handouts there. Wilson will get you some handouts. The book that I'm basing all this on is Patterson's book of Crucial Conversations. How many people are familiar with this book?
No, Fierce Conversations.
Fierce Conversations is different. That's by Susan, forget her last name. That's a good book as well, but it is a different focus than this one. Okay, Fierce Conversations is much more, how do you deal with people in leadership to get them to face issues. This is dealing with what we're talking about today, conflict, when conflict arises. I highly, highly recommend this book. Much more important than this little seminar here is this book. This is based upon 30 years of research. Thousands and thousands of hours of research have gone into this book, Crucial Conversations. It's available in many different languages. I just taught 2 weeks ago, I taught a week-long course using this book, and some of the students were Korean, and they had a Korean copy. Some of them were from Latin America. They had a copy in Spanish, and some of them were North American, and they had English copies. So it's also available on audio. I've listened to this book about 6 or 7 times. Just as I'm traveling, I plug it in and I listen. I try to, you know, learn this stuff so that I can not just teach it, but so I can actually live it out. So I highly recommend it. This is the kind of material where you can't get it in a short seminar. You have to keep going over and over and picking certain things, saying, I'm going to practice that and put it into practice, and then it becomes part of your life. I should also mention that in this book, there is summary pages. It's very well laid out. At the end of every chapter is a brief summary of all the content, and there's a couple of pages right at the very end, which summarizes all the skills and tools all in a couple of pages. So it's very, very accessible, very easy to use, a very easy read. Highly recommended. Okay, so we want to talk about crucial conversations. What do we mean by crucial conversations here is a conversation where opinions vary. First of all, there's three things. First of all, the opinions vary. There's two people, they have two very different opinions about something. Okay? That in itself doesn't make it a crucial conversation, because we have different opinions all the time and we're not in conflict. It's not a problem. Secondly, the stakes are high. So that if it goes one way, then there will be loss for somebody. If it goes the other way, it will be a loss for the other person. Or they see it as a situation being very, very serious, that if this doesn't happen or that doesn't happen, that we could have a major problem. There could be a breakup of the church. There could be a breakup of our small group. There could be people could leave. The stakes are high in this situation. That still is not sufficient to make it a crucial conversation. What makes it a crucial conversation is that emotions run strong. This is the key point in this, is that it is the emotions that derail us. If the emotions, our emotions are in check, if we're in control of our emotions and we have different opinions and we have the stakes are high, but we're in control of the emotions, everybody we're talking to is in control of the emotions, everybody feels safe, then it's not a crucial conversation. Things will work out well because you can talk to each other. When you feel safe, you can say anything. When you don't feel safe, when your emotions are running high, then even the smallest thing can become a disaster and break down and have a breakdown of relationships. So we're talking about something very, very important here to when it comes to the emotions. Is it possible to talk to somebody about significant things with comfort and pleasant emotions? Yes, it is. Is it possible to have a situation where emotions do run strong and there's this sense of great conflict and fear and lack of safety? Is it possible to take that and change it so that people do feel safe, emotions drop, and you are able to have a conversation where you can talk about those opposing opinions with the high stakes without that emotion? The answer to that also is yes. There are skills. And we probably have all seen it happen. We've probably all seen that happen where tensions are high, then somebody says something and calms people down, and you wind up having a great conversation, and you walk away and you say, how did that person do that? How did we, you know, I was afraid things were really going to go south, there was going to be loud voices, and people were going to get angry, and people were going to storm out, and instead this person said something, and all of a sudden we're talking, and we come to a resolution. That was amazing. How did he do that? Well, that's what this book is about. Figuring out how to do that and how to do that well. So when conversations become crucial, when in your small group there are some things happen where tensions start to rise, perhaps you have somebody in your small group who is lacking in some social skills and they like to talk all the time and they don't get the hints that they should be stopping talking, and other people start rolling their eyes, they start muttering, things are crucial. That is a crucial situation because emotions arise. The stakes, what are the stakes there? The stakes are, is this small group going to be viable and valuable to people or not? And so the leader is thinking, if this person doesn't stop talking, people are going to get frustrated. It's going to go the wrong way. We're not going to get anything done. And people are going to be angry at this one person. How do you deal with that? That is the sort of thing we're talking about. That when that happens, there needs to be skills in order to deal with that kind of conflict in a way that is helpful. So we can do one of three things. We can avoid them. We can just avoid them and just ignore it. And why do we choose that? Very often, we choose the avoidance of conflict because we think it's the Christian way. I won't make an issue, I won't be divisive, I won't cause further problems. Sometimes we're afraid that if I try to say something, it will just be worse. It will make it worse, so we'll just, rather than having it worse, we'll just have it bad. Bad is better than worse, so we'll stick with the bad. And that is the kind of attitude that prevails that causes us to just be quiet. The second thing we do is we can face them. Face the issue and handle it poorly, so that we actually do make it worse. And the third thing we can do is we can face the issues and handle them well. And if we handle them well, why not do that? That's the best. And what Patterson says is that it is possible to do that. And I would suggest that that is true, and I have found it to be true. So what if we are in the middle of it? What the book says is that we should not avoid flight. I mean, that we should not avoid the issue by flight. We should not fight, in other words, become violent or confrontative. which is the same as silence or violence. Going to flight or going to silence or going to violence or going to fight. Okay? So one is very passive and one is very aggressive. Now, there's another way to think of these that I've come up with as I was thinking about how to consider these is that what silence is basically the attitude of trying not to lose. I don't want to lose. I don't feel up to the fight, but I don't want to lose, so I will be quiet, try to keep the status quo as much as I can just by trying to keep my nose out of it, try to just keep quiet. Maybe the problem will go away. I don't want to lose. Fight is the opposite, where it says, I'm going to win this. It's an attempt to win. The other person loses, I win. And that is the mentality of fight. For example, in your small group, somebody can say something sarcastic, or somebody may say something that is bordering on gossip about something else, or somebody can say, you know, the pastor's sermon on Sunday really stunk the place out. Why do we live with that kind of sermons? How do you respond? What happens there? And very often people will just say, let's move on and let's read our Bible passage for today. Okay? What you have done is you have ignored the elephant. Okay? There is an elephant in the room. It says, I'm right there in the room and no one even acknowledges me. And that is what happens. That is the silence thing. But we've been in places where there has been this elephant in the room and nobody's talking about them. These tensions, and we just go on as if it's all right. But there are problems with that. Let me read you out of a quote from the book. It says, every time we find ourselves arguing, debating, running away, or otherwise acting in an ineffective way, it's because we don't know how to share meaning. Instead of engaging in healthy dialogue, we play silly and costly games. Sometimes we move to silence. Sometimes we rely on hints, sarcasm, innuendo, and looks of disgust to make our points. On other occasions, not knowing how to stay in dialogue, we rely on violence. Anything from subtle manipulation to verbal attacks. We act like we know everything, hoping people will believe our arguments. And then we use every manner of force to try to get our way. We borrow power from the boss. We hit people with biased monologues. The goal, of course, is always the same: to compel others to our point of view, to win. Okay? And the boss could be any kind of authority. It could be talking about the elders or the church. You could talk about God. We can talk about the Bible. This is what God says. This is what the Bible says. And we use that to compel others. Or, as a small group leader, very often the temptation is to seek to control. We've got to get through this Bible lesson. We've got to make this happen. So let me jump in and control this so that we don't get off track and just make it happen. That kind of controlling can make you feel like we've completed it, but if in the process there has been conflict that has not been resolved, if there has been not an addressing of the conflict in the situation, then we haven't been ministers of reconciliation. We've missed the main ministry in order to get the task done or to get the agenda fulfilled. So what is the key skill? The key skill that we're talking about here is dialogue. This is always the bottom line. Always trying to get to dialogue about the issue. If you can get to dialogue, then the battle is half won, and you can face it and deal with it. So at the core of every successful conversation lies the free flow of relevant information. That's another quote from the book. So what the authors have done is they have broken down the components of this skill, how to get people who are, opinions differ, stakes are high, emotions run strong, how to get people who are in that situation to a place where they freely and comfortably and safely put their opinions out on the table, where they talk about the pool of meaning, where they put their opinions in the pool of meaning in order to resolve. If you can get the dialogue going, then that allows resolution and conflict to be resolved. Okay, so the key skills is to learn how to have a crucial conversation, to learn how to use these. Now, one aspect, this is not part of the book, but this is something that I stress over and over again, particularly when I'm dealing with people in cross-cultural settings and they're dealing with a lot of frustrating conflict, somebody who's in conflict, then I say to them, this is what you need to remember. This is what you need to practice. You need to say, who is responsible to hold a crucial conversation? I am. Not somebody else. Not that it's their problem. If you are in conflict or you're seeing conflict, then who is responsible to hold a crucial conversation in that situation? I am. I am. That's the key. The second is when should I hold a crucial conversation? Now, there's another great book, Cross-Cultural Conflict by Elmer, Duane Elmer, and I love that book. It's got a lot of good stuff, but one of the things he says is, which I disagree with, is he says, sometimes you have to look and say, is this conflict worth it? Should I face this conflict? And is it that big of a deal, or should I let it go? And if it's not a big deal, then just let it go. I'm suggesting no. I'm suggesting the opposite of that. I am suggesting learn the skills of doing conflict well, and you do that by dealing with every little conflict, especially the little ones, because the little ones are the easy ones. If you say, I don't need to worry about that, that's not a big deal, and I just leave it, I'll just deal with the big ones, well, it's kind of like saying, I'm not going to play junior hockey, I'm just going to go straight to the NHL. You don't go straight to the NHL by playing junior hockey. By just going to the NHL without playing junior hockey. You have to learn the skills slowly and a little bit at a time. So look for all aspects. Learn to look for the aspects of conflict in your life and then use the skills to resolve them. Somebody leaves a towel on the floor. The kid left a towel on the floor again. I put up. Now, wait a minute. Here's a conflict. Okay, how am I going to deal with it? What are the tools that I can use here to be able to deal with this? And it's just a little thing, but now I can use it. So then you use those skills in that little situation. You go, wow, these really work. This is amazing. And you learn to use those. They become part of your life, the habits, so that when a big conflict comes, you find yourself that, hey, I know how to handle this. Okay? So instead of saying that's not important, get into the practice of looking for, welcoming, and addressing any and all issues to practice in dealing with conflict. And then also hold crucial conversations about crucial conversations. Take ownership that when you see that there's a conflict, it may not be your conflict, but somebody should be dealing with something, that you go to them and say, hey, you need to have a crucial conversation here with this person. Let me help you do that. But there does need to be a crucial conversation, because there needs to be some reconciliation here. There needs to be a resolving of this issue. And here's how you do it. Let me help you. Let me walk you through the process of doing this. Okay, let's move on then to the actual process of what you do. Any questions so far? Any thoughts? Anything that you're uncertain about or what I said? Yes,
Kathy. I just have a comment that I'll throw out. Is it more complicated to either deal with every little thing or just deal with the big things? If you are, when you're raising children, yes, you're there at the beginning of conflict, so you can deal with every little conflict, and that helps. So big conflicts don't come.
Yep.
But I wonder if that's a little bit different if you intersect with a person when they haven't lived a life of dealing with little conflicts, so the big conflict comes. I wonder if there is a different dynamic in that situation where would it be possible that there would be a little conflict you would want to avoid so that you could deal with a big conflict in that kind of dynamic?
I suppose it may be possible. You can think of a lot of different scenarios and maybe say, yeah, I can see that. But at the same time, I think in a little conflict, if we follow these tools, follow these steps that they do, that it can be something where the person, because the key here is to help the person feel safe. And if a person is used to being in conflict all the time, is always feeling attacked, is always feeling, you know, being beaten down or something, or that's the only way they know how to deal with conflict is to yell and swear or something, well, if they can feel safe, the goal then is to say, okay, I have to work hard on this one step. That person needs to feel safe. So even if it's a little conflict or a big conflict, the goal is I've got to make this person feel safe so that they know that they can trust me and be able to say what they really believe so that we can deal with this issue. Yeah?
On that note, would you say that it would be maybe prudent to maybe have a parking lot? So you can see someone needs a crucial conversation, but it may not be beneficial to the hearers, to the rest of the group.
Absolutely.
So we'll park that, and hey, let's you and I go for coffee, or let's talk about
absolutely.
It after. And if you sort of feel the group is kind of, now they feel unsafe as well, what is it? Then you could actually maybe report back after you got it worked through.
That's a very good point, because some things are not to be, may not be profitable to be laid out from the whole group. That may not feel that, make that person feel safe. Again, that's a safety issue.
Yeah.
Is this something, are we the type of group where I can actually address this issue with this person right here
right.
in front of everybody, or will that just make them not feel safe?
And draw the people in, now you get all these.
And people start feeling very uncomfortable, because the idea here is in order to resolve conflict, people need to feel comfortable, and if they're feeling like they're being singled out, which they will read it as an attack, well then you've gone against the point, which is making it safe.
Right.
So I think your point is very well taken. You may say, you know, I would like to talk to you about that. You raise that, so it's something that's going to be talked about, you put it aside, but it's not that you are ignoring it,
right.
You're just parking it and dealing with it.
Mm-hmm.
Good point, I like that point, yeah. Any other comments? Okay. Where do we want to go? First skill. The first skill is to start with heart, which means start with yourself. Work on me first. And what this means is, I think I did go too far. Work on yourself first. Is to remember that the only person that you can directly control is yourself. And not surprising, at the core of dealing with situations we normally would like to avoid is a recognition that we need to develop personal insight, self-control, the desire to replace some of our natural and harmful responses with productive and relationship-building responses. We need to start with heart. And what that means is we need to be aware of and master our own responses. There's two different things. Being aware of them and then mastering them. Very often we'll be in the middle of a response and we say, how did I get here? Why am I suddenly yelling? We need to learn to be aware of that. And there are some tools to do in order to be aware of that. Part of it is to be aware of two things that are going on all the time when you're in the midst of a conversation or when you're in a small group. When you're in a small group or small group leader, you need to be sensitive to two things at the same time. You need to be sensitive to the content of the dialogue or the discussion or the interaction that's going on. But you also need to be always sensitive to and aware of the dynamic that's going on. What are people feeling? What are people responding to? Are emotions starting to arise? Is somebody feeling like they're not allowed to talk? Is somebody being dominant? Is somebody feeling that their opinion is not getting the respect it deserves? And so they're talking a little bit louder and more aggressively. What is going on in that dynamic? Is that dynamic that also, you got a dual track, two things. Thinking about the content, but thinking about what is going on around in the type of interactions that are going on. So that you have to think about, and when it comes to self, work on yourself first, you have to be constantly thinking about these kind of questions, saying, when an emotion starts to rise, you start feeling a little bit frustrated, or maybe a little bit angry, or a little bit out of control, any of these kind of emotions where you're feeling uncertain in any way and you're not comfortable, you need to think, well, am I feeling manipulated? Am I feeling threatened? Am I feeling embarrassed? Is the other person angry? Is there something going on that I'm uncomfortable? What is going on here in the dynamic that I need to be sensitive to? Is there an elephant in the room that I'm ignoring? Those are the things that we have to learn to be sensitive to. We need to be aware of our own emotions and our motives and be able to deal with that. Now that may sound like the impossible task, That may sound like the impossible task. It's a natural tendency is to react defensively when somebody pushes our buttons. And I do it all the time. I'll give you some, give one of my examples, embarrassing example because it's so childish. I'm walking with my wife and I compliment her. I compliment her, that's my intention, and I compliment her, and she read it as being patronizing. And because she thought it was patronizing, she snapped back at me. When she snapped back at me, I'm trying to be complimentary, she thinks it's patronizing, and as a result, what do? I go to silence. And I said to her, that's the way she's going to treat me, and I'm not going to compliment her again. I'm just going to be quiet here. That's, you know, right? Such a childish reaction, and yet, you know, it just poof, is there, and all, I'm thinking, where did that come from? Why am I thinking that? You know, why am I assuming? I'm telling myself all these stories about my wife, whom I live with for how many years now? 33 years. You know, and I know her, and I know she's not like that, so why am I telling myself this story, going to these emotions, jumping in this through these all these different hoops, these reactions, realizing that, no, I need to recognize what's going on here. My buttons have been pushed, and now is when I need to start using these tools. And that's the first tool, is to start with heart and recognize something's going on that I don't want to have go on. I'm feeling this emotion. Why am I feeling this emotion? It's that kind of self-awareness that we need to get to. So we need to recognize when we find ourselves moving, we need to be self-aware when we find ourselves moving towards silence or violence, be self-aware, and then do this. Step back mentally. There's a stepping back mentally that we can do where we go, well, wait a minute, why am I feeling like this? As soon as we start to analyze our emotions rather than ride our emotions, it actually serves to dampen our emotions. We're able to be more logical about things. Stepping back and thinking about it helps us calm ourselves down. It's a mentally stepping back where we say, I'm getting emotional. Why am I doing that? What's going on? As soon as we start thinking that way, we counteract that tendency to ride our emotions. Then acknowledge the reality. Face it and say, you know what? I am feeling embarrassed, or I'm feeling disrespected, or I'm feeling unfairly put upon. That's what's happening. That's why I'm reacting this way, because that's what I'm feeling. That's what I'm thinking about, is these things. And you have to own your emotions. Step back, own those emotions, and then focus on what you really want. What is it that I really want in this situation? Because if we can ask what I really want and pay attention to our mokas to refocus our brain, find our bearings away from the content of what's going on, the emotions, my feelings of I've been, you know, been rejected by my wife and feeling those emotions and feeling disrespected and not treated properly. If I can step back and look at that and think about it and say, well, what do I really want here? I want a good relationship with my wife. That's what I really want. And right now I don't feel like that's what I want. I feel like I want to win. I want to teach her a lesson. She just taught me a lesson. I'll just teach her a lesson. Wait a minute. I don't want that. What do I really want? I want a good relationship with my wife. That's the best case scenario. So let me work towards that. It's those kind of steps that need to go through. And then we need to avoid the fool's choice. The fool's choice is this. The fool's choice is approaching a situation as if there's only two bad options. Either I speak up and I'm blunt and I tell this person off, because that's what they need, or I just be quiet and I don't say anything and I just let it go. Those are two bad choices. Those are the fool's choices, is I either have to tell this person off, put him in his place, or just be quiet, I'll just ignore it and let it go. There is a third option. And we need to be able to look for that. Rather than assuming I have to be honest and blunt or avoid the whole issue in order to have peace, instead, what we want to do is watch to see if I'm telling myself that I have to choose between two options, between peace and honesty, between winning and losing, between speaking angrily or letting disaster happen, and so on, and saying, wait a minute, am I giving myself two bad options? Is that the only options I've got? So we have to be aware to see if I'm telling myself that story. Then I have to break free of that fool's choice by searching for the elusive and. Rather than saying, either I do this or I do that, I say, well, how can I be honest and result in peace? How can I speak up but not angrily? How can I do this in a way that the other person will listen and respond well? How can I do both things well? Is there a way to tell your peer your real concerns honestly and openly and not insult or offend them? Is there a way to speak up and maintain respect and good atmosphere within the small group? Is there a way to seek to add meaning to the pool? That's what they call the meaning to a pool. Everybody speaking in and putting things on the table, adding meaning to the pool, and build up the relationship. Okay? So, one of the things that you can do to test yourself to see how good you are at this is do something called the style under stress. And I wrote there, take the free test at Vital Smarts, okay? If you type in Vital Smarts in your Google browser, it'll take you to the Vital Smarts website, which is this, their website here. And if you follow links through, you will be able to sign up and take a free style under stress test. And this is my style under stress scores. This is a couple years old, and I'm scared to take it again just in case my scores are the same. But what it shows is, it tells you what your tendency is. This is the silent side, this is the violent side. So the higher your number is, the more you tend to do that. So masking in silence is the idea of saying something but not really addressing the issue, but just kind of overtly addressing it by using sarcasm or couching your words in something else or using sugar coating. Oh, that's really, really nice, when you really don't mean that it's really, really nice. So you know that's the masking part. You're actually being silent because you're not addressing the issue. You're not addressing the issue, you're just pretending that it can be addressed that way. Because you've always had that, you know, why did you act so sarcastically with this person? What do you mean sarcastically? I just said this. I just said he did a good job. What are you talking about? When you know that you said it in such a way that it was very cutting and it was undermining. That's the masking part. Avoiding is where you have the conversation, but you refuse to talk about the issue. That's the elephant in the room, but you never talk about the elephant. You talk about everything else. That's avoiding. Withdrawing means you leave, right? Because if somebody gets up out of your small group because the tension's there, they don't like the tension, they get up and they leave. That's withdrawing. They just leave, okay? Those are all ways to do the silence part. The violence is the controlling, where somebody tries to control the conversation. They try to take it over. This is my wife and I, when we go for walks, we love to talk all the time. And sometimes our discussions get quite heated. And this is where I practice a lot of these stuff, and often when I don't practice them, this is what happens, is I go to controlling. I start to control the situation because I'm trying to explain to my wife why she needs to think this way, and she goes to silence. She doesn't say anything. Okay? Then we say, okay, this is crucial. I need to deal with this. How do we back away from that and deal with it? So it helps understand what I tend to do. Labeling is where you stereotype things, where you say in your small group and you say, somebody says, oh, well, that's just thinking in terms of what would be, you know, that's kind of thinking like an extreme Calvinist. That's an extreme Calvinist way of thinking. Or something like that, and you're just dismissing what the person said by putting in a box that you can throw away, okay? That's labeling, trying to control it by labeling. And attacking, where you actually attack the person. You're just not somebody who thinks very deeply, are you? Right? That's attacking, where you're actually dealing with the person itself. And what scares me is I got a 2 up there. Everything's a 1 and that's a 2, right? And I'm looking at the... You know, maybe I don't trust this thing quite as much. I don't think I do that. But I'm pretty sure I don't. I hope I do way better now than when I actually took this test. So, anyway, the other part of this test that's good is that these are all the tools. These are all the tools. Start with heart, learn to look, make it safe, master my stories, state my path, explore others' paths, and then move to action. And this test will tell you how good you are on doing these things. And when I first took this test, I realized I am so lousy at starting with the heart. at actually starting with my own emotions, taking control of my own emotions. Yeah.
What's a pass?
What's a pass? There is no pass or fail. I'm sorry. No, it just it goes from 0 to 3, right? Okay. If you got 3 on all of these, then you don't need to learn anything from me, I tell you, right? And what I do see is here is like making it safe, mastering my stories, exploring others' paths. I'm very good at that. I do know that. That's accurate there that way, because I am very willing to hear other people. I want to hear their stories, and so I want to make it comfortable for them so I can hear what they're thinking. These are the tools. These are the tools that are in this book, and we'll touch on a few of them before we finish. What time are we supposed to finish? 2:45. Is that right?
2:45. 2:45?
Yeah. Okay. So let's go and let's talk about this whole idea of creating safety, because creating safety is really the major issue. The other tools are there, and they're important to do, but creating safety is really the key, making it safe so that people will freely and comfortably add to the pool of meaning. So once we've gained self-control, control of ourselves, there are a series of techniques and tools that you can use in order to make it safe that result in dialogue. And there's a lot of things that kind of need to be done to make it safe. You've got to be looking at yourself. You've got to be looking at others. And it can feel very, very complicated, kind of like first when you first learn to drive a standard car. And you got to worry about the clutch and the brake, and you got to worry about the gear shift and slowing down and speeding up. And you're focusing on all those different things. Once you get used to it, then you don't even think about it anymore. It becomes natural. It's the same thing here, that there are a lot of things that at the beginning, you know, you'll stall the conversation, you may grind the gears. Those things happen. But the goal, the primary goal, is to keep in dialogue. Keep in dialogue. And to get to dialogue. So how do we do that? When we see that we're going to fight for either fight or flight, or we see others going to either fight or flight, then we need to, first of all, we need to learn to look. Learn to look at others. We need to interpret conflict and tension as a lack of safety. If we see somebody getting frustrated or angry or going to silence where they're not saying anything, any kind of indication that there are tensions and conflicts that people are feeling, we need to see that. We need to learn to look, because we can see in our small group, if we learn to look, see people kind of muttering or rolling their eyes or feeling frustrated or whatever, then you say, there is something crucial going on here. There is conflict here that needs to be dealt with. We need to learn to look at the content and the conditions, the content and the dynamic going on. We have to look at the physical signals, the emotions that are happening, the behaviors that are happening. Watch for those safety problems. And what do you do then once you see that there is problems, once there is a conflict that is happening? Well, the first thing to do is, this is the first tool, is to step out of that conversation. I talked about stepping back mentally. Now this is when you're in a conversation setting, you actually step out of the conversation. Very often we're tempted just to kind of plow ahead. And we're just going to plow ahead and get through this. I just want you to understand. This is something you need to know. Have you heard, you're talking to somebody and they go, there's something that you need to understand. You need to understand this. That's just plowing ahead and not being sensitive to the dynamic and the emotions that are going on. And that's not helpful. Instead, we need to step back out of that conversation. And we need to say something like, you know, can we step out of this conversation for a minute? Just to step back. I'm feeling uncomfortable. And I kind of sense that other people are feeling uncomfortable here. The dynamic here is really awkward and is not being helpful. Just stepping back and talking about, not the content, but the dynamic. But the fact that there's something uncomfortable going on. Just doing that is a great tool. It helps everybody go, oh, yeah, that's right. I'm feeling kind of uncomfortable. I'm kind of upset. Yeah. So you step back. I'm starting to get upset about this. I feel like, this is a story I'm telling myself. I feel like you're trying to force me to make a decision I don't want to make, and that's making me uncomfortable. And I'm feeling, you know, my emotions are getting upset, and I don't want to feel like that. I don't want to respond poorly with you. And so, you know, how can we just do this in a different way? Very often we can do that simply. I mean, if it's one-to-one, it's not so much a small group thing. But if you're talking to somebody, if somebody's being very aggressive to you or something like that, and you're standing up, a really good idea is to say, can we sit down and chat about this? Yeah. Because just making that shift breaks that thing. And you can sit down and say, okay, I sense that there's really something really important here. There's tension here. So can we deal with it? Because you've broken that dynamic. You've broken that tension. So stepping out of the conversation is the first tool. And then you name it. You just name what you're feeling. Because you've learned, you've started with heart, and you're looking at yourself, you're recognizing your emotions, you step out and you name your emotions. Name them out loud. I'm feeling frustrated. I'm feeling this. If you say what you're feeling, people will tend to respond very well to that. And they will say, oh, I don't want you to feel like that. That's not what I'm thinking. They may not even realize that you're doing that because they can't read you very well. They can't read what you're feeling. You may see somebody, I mean, how many times have you had this where in some sort of conversation, some sort of crowd, or something, and you say something and somebody smiles and you think that they're laughing at you or mocking you, right? That's a story you're telling yourself, and you think that and you respond that way when they might not even be thinking about you at all. Okay? And that's the sort of thing. So when you express your emotions and what you're feeling, the other person may say, oh, I didn't know you were feeling like that. Okay, I'm sorry. I don't want that. I would love if we can resolve this in a good way. And it's amazing how just stepping it out, naming your emotions, naming what's going on helps. The next thing is to decide which of the condition of safety is at risk. It could be just the purpose, the mutual purpose, and you may need to have a mutual purpose. The goals may be very different, and that can happen very easily in a small group. One person's coming for the Bible study, one's coming for the prayer, another person's coming because they just want to have that talking together, and they can all be very frustrated. Why do we spend so much time on prayer? Why do we spend so much time on a Bible study? Why do we have the lecture? I want to have everybody talking together, and the leader just goes on and on and on and giving us this teaching, and I want to be able to interact with that. You know, you got all these different expectations going on. What that means is that there needs to be a conversation about the mutual purpose. What is the purpose here? When there is that kind of conflict comes up, we say, we're at cross purposes here. So rather than ignoring them and moving it on, you say, well, let's talk about it. Let's step out of the conversation and talk about our goals here. What is it that we want to have? The other more important issue is mutual respect. If mutual respect is there, then you can deal with mutual purpose. If mutual respect isn't there, then forget about the mutual purpose. You're never going to get there. You've got to work on the respect first. You can't... How do you do that? How do you get to mutual respect? Because you may be dealing with people who come from different backgrounds, whose morals and values are different, social skills are different. And how do you do that when you've got such an eclectic group together where people are frustrated with other people? How do you develop that mutual respect? Well, we stay in dialogue by finding a way to honor and guard another person's basic humanity. And a key tool for this is, this tool actually is not on any of the handles. I just stuck it in there. I thought, oh, this is an important tool. I should stick this one here. So I call it a bonus tool because I numbered the other ones. I shouldn't have done that, but it is a bonus tool. It says, look for and explore ways we are similar than rather than clarifying differences. The tendency we often have when there's conflict is say, okay, tell us what your idea is, tell us what your idea is, and you're talking about the differences, and you're saying, well, these clash, and I don't know how to get these together, and you're talking about what clashes. Very often when there's a conflict, 95% of the issue people agree with, and it's just that 5% they disagree with. The key is, don't talk about the differences. Don't say, well, what do you think about this and what do you think about this, and have them talk about their differences, because then you're just talking about clashes. Instead, say, let's step back a bit and talk about what it is that we agree with. Which part of this do you really like? And when you get people to talk about what they agree, this is water for me too. Yeah, good, I need another one, thanks. when people are talking about what they agree with, very often what they disagree with then comes into focus, and they are able to make that mesh. And they're able to realize, well, okay, yeah, I can see that we could do it this way then. And then suddenly, the conflict has resolved itself because you spent most of the time talking about what is similar rather than what is the issue, what is the difference. Does that make sense? Any questions, concerns so far? Okay. Next, I shouldn't go so quick, just in case somebody did have a question. Anybody a question there on the chat room there? Nobody's got something there? Okay.
I did have a question.
Yep, go ahead.
I think you raced through it, but I just wanted to pause on the consideration of culture and finding what is going to show mutual respect in that cultural context could be completely different from what would be, you know, smiling may actually be a put down as opposed to keeping your face, you know, serious or something like that. Can you comment on that?
I can. In fact, I can give you a whole lecture on that.
Yeah.
I would recommend Eric Law's book, which is The Wolf Lies Down with the Lamb, something like that, or The Lamb Lies Down with the Wolf, in which he talks about languages of respect. And what you have to do, because very often, so I was very respectful with that person, right? I was very respectful. Well, you may have been respectful according to your idea of respect, but maybe not according to the other person's idea of respect. So in order to be able to function well cross-culturally is to be able to not just be respectful yourself, but learn how other people express respect. And so that's your point you're making, and it's very good. And tied to that, too, would be issues of power distance, because power distance has a lot to do with how respect is understood and how people deal with power distance. We're in Canada, we're low power distance. Other cultures, Philippines, Korea, they're more high power distance, Latin America. And so you get that clash of low power distance, high power distance, which is really a clash of respect. You can read about that. I have four articles on my website on power distance. If you look up power distance Naylor, Google that, you should be able to, should take you to those articles on power distance, which introduce you to the languages of respect, and you can find Eric Law's book on there, not his book, but what do you call it, bibliography on this book on the website as well. Okay, well, let's move on. Don't want to get me onto cultural stuff, because that's what I usually talk about, and I'll go on and on. So let's keep on with this one. The next thing is to apologize when appropriate. That's an important thing. Once you have your emotions in check, you say, did I say something? Did I start getting angry? Was I feeling angry? Well, whatever is appropriate, just say that. You know, I'm sorry. I was feeling angry against you, and I shouldn't have felt that way. I apologize for feeling that way. Or I apologize for speaking abruptly. I apologize for whatever it should be. That sort of thing really lowers the temperature and helps people feel safe with you. So that's another thing to remember. The second tool that I want to focus on, apart from the bonus tool, is to contrast to fix misunderstandings. This is really a great tool. You contrast. What I mean by contrast, or what they mean by contrast in the book, is that don't start with an explanation. This is very much a Western thing, too, is that we like to take shortcuts. We like to be very efficient. Well, contrasting is not efficient, but it is effective. We tend to start with, well, I don't think that that's right. I want to say this. Or in business meetings, you can have this kind of thing where people will stand up and say, well, I don't think that we should do that. Why are we doing this over there? And it feels very divisive. It feels very confrontative. And it makes people feel very uncomfortable, and people start telling stories about why that person is saying it that way. Well, the idea of contrasting is to anticipate the stories that people are going to tell and address them. So, for example, here's a couple of examples from the book. Is, I don't want to suggest that this problem is yours. So saying, I don't, start off with, I don't want this. I'm not trying to do this. I don't want to suggest that this problem is yours. The truth is, I think it's ours. I'm not trying to put the burden on you. I don't even know what the solution is. What I do want is to be able to talk so that we can understand each other better. Perhaps this will help me change how I'm responding. Can you see that? Where you're contracting, you're saying, this is what I don't want. I don't want to wind up in this situation here where you feel like you're being blamed and I'm saying it's all your fault. I don't want that. But what I do want is this. I want a situation where we can talk together. When you have that contrasting, what you're doing is you're preventing those bad stories that can get people upset. Or here's another one. I can see that we disagree with each other. I don't want to force my opinion. I merely want to talk about what each of us likes and doesn't like. That way we'll be able to see what we need to do in order to come to the right conclusion and why. My only goal is to come up with some ideas that will make both of us happy. Okay? So by recognizing that if I just give my opinion, the person will feel like the opinion is being forced on me. You say, I don't want to do that. I don't want to force my opinion on you. By saying the don't and then saying the do, you save those misunderstandings. The next skill is to master your stories. The idea of the stories is that we tell ourselves stories all the time. Whenever you feel an emotion, any emotion, the reason why that emotion is there is that you told yourself a story. Somebody smiles, you feel embarrassed. In between that split second between somebody smiling and you feeling embarrassed, there was a story told. You told yourself a story about what that person's smile meant and what they were doing and thinking and why they smiled in that way, because they were saying something very negative about you and that you responded to that. And so all that happened in all the split seconds. We tell ourselves stories all the time. Mastering the stories is saying this, that whenever we feel an emotion, that we retrace our path and we say, how did that emotion get there? What happened that made me have that emotion? Something happened over here. I interpreted it in this way, and I felt this emotion. So we retrace the path by which we responded in such a way. So we have to notice our behavior. We have to be alert enough to say, I'm feeling emotion. And we have to be aware as well that when we are feeling emotion, what our story is. And how to recognize the story you're telling yourself about what somebody has reacted to you is notice the hot words, in the book they call it the hot terms. For example, when assessing the facts, this is a quote from the book, when assessing the facts, you might say, she scowled at me. Or he made a sarcastic comment. Okay? Words such as scowl and sarcastic, they are interpretations. They're not the facts, but they're interpretation, because maybe it wasn't a scowl. Maybe it was a look of being puzzled, but you took it as a scowl. Or maybe it wasn't intended to be a sarcastic comment. Maybe it was intended to be lighthearted, to kind of ease the tension, and they weren't trying to be sarcastic, but you read it as sarcastic. So we have to separate between the way we interpret things and the way the facts are, the way the reality is. What is the evidence? And how to do that is to say, what evidence do I have that this person scowled at me? Well, the evidence is her face turned in a certain direction and her lip kind of turned up and her nose wrinkled. Okay. Well, if her lip turned up and her nose wrinkled, those are the facts. That's what happened. But my interpretation is that it was a scowl, that's what she was thinking. And that's my interpretation. So we have to keep those separate. So notice our behavior, get in touch with our feelings, analyze our stories in this way, and to tell the rest of the story. And telling the rest of the story is to recognize that there may be some other story, some other possibilities to my own story. Now, as I'm going through this, you're saying, how on earth would you do all this in a split second? How would you analyze this in a split second? Well, it's really hard to do, which is why sometimes it's good to say, can I step out of the conversation a bit and kind of work those things through? But sometimes when we get into practice, we can say, I know what I'm doing because I do it all the time. And I've analyzed it before. I know what I'm saying. Okay, I recognize that. I recognize the story I'm telling myself, and I need to analyze that story. I need to check out whether that story is true. Well, how do you check out whether the story is true? You get back to the facts. I mean, you've had it where you're talking to a kid or a colleague or something, and they make a face. And immediately you say, don't you look at me like that, or don't be so sarcastic, or don't be whatever. You've told yourself a story, and you put it back upon the person. Well, instead of doing that, you deal with it. Let me jump ahead. Let's ignore those. You deal with it this way, by stating your path. Stating your path is this, is that you share your facts, the common ground. You say, okay, I just noticed you wrinkled your nose. And that made me feel uncomfortable because I saw you wrinkle your nose. And so you shared your facts and you saw the wrinkle of the nose. You said it was made you feel uncomfortable. That's the sharing the facts. That's the common ground that everybody can agree with. Then you tell your story. Because you wrinkled your nose, it made me feel like you were dismissing what I said. That you were not accepting what I said, or you were making fun of me. That's what I felt. So that's your story. Then the next, the A, right? You're following the state your path, S-T-A-T-E. Then you ask for others' paths, and you say, was that what you were doing? Were you really mocking me and dismissing my story? The other two are how you do it. You do it by talking tentatively. Rather than saying, why were you sarcastic? It's, I felt as if you were being sarcastic. I wonder if you were mocking me. That's the story I'm telling myself. It's talking tentatively rather than bluntly. By talking tentatively, you're inviting people in to explore it. This is something that's also a very cultural type thing, too. In Western culture, we are taught to critique. If somebody makes a fact, a bare bone fact, and says, this is the way it is, we are taught to say, well, wait a minute, I'm not so sure. What about this? What about that? And we critique, we tear it apart. However, if somebody says, you know, I wonder if this, then we say, oh, they're drawing us into that question. Then we say, well, let me wonder that too. And I kind of think it's this way, and you're drawing people into the question. So talking tentatively draws people into the conversation rather than bluntly confronting them with, this is the way it is, in which they do not have an invitation into the conversation. And then the last one is to encourage the testing. So once you say, this is my story, you say, you know, does that make sense to you? Is this really what's happening? I want to know what the dynamic is here. Can you help me out here? Can you give me your own story? Etc. So what you're trying to make it safe to have that exploration and be able to talk together about any kind of situation that may come up. Can I finish off with one more tool? I want to give you one more tool. This is my absolute favorite one. This one changed everything for me. This is called ABC. Agree, Build, Contrast. And let me suggest that you try this. I tried to do this, and I was astounded. Whenever somebody says anything, expresses a value, an idea, or a thought that you disagree with, don't disagree. That's the first rule. Don't disagree. Instead, agree. Okay? Agree. I don't mean agree with what you disagree with. Instead, agree with what you can agree with. When somebody says something you disagree with, there's still things there that you can agree with. Somebody says to you, oh, my son's moved in with his girlfriend, but that's okay. People don't get married anymore, and that's fine for people just to live together. They don't need to get married. How do you agree with that? You say, I agree. People are living together without getting married. I agree. That's happening all over the place. Okay? You can agree. Just not with the value. You're agreeing with the fact, the reality. Okay? So you agree there. But then you go on and you build. You go on and you build. So if you're in a small group and somebody says something you disagree with, don't disagree with them. Agree with what you can agree, and then explore the question broader. So you say, you know, that's very interesting that people are, a lot more people are living together rather than getting married. Marriage doesn't have the respect it once had. And I think that really affects society, doesn't it? I mean, people aren't so permanent living together. I wonder how that affects kids. You know, that seems there's a lot more destabilization of a society because of that. And you're building this bigger picture, okay? Well, then, after you've built this bigger picture, then you can come to the contrast. And now, the point of a contrast is this, is if you disagree with somebody, if somebody says, I say this, and I say, I disagree, what are you doing? I'm saying, I'm right, you're wrong, we're going to fight about this until you see that I'm right and you're wrong. And you're just dealing with the I'm right, you're wrong situation. I win, you lose. And we'll have a fight until we find out. That's what I disagree means. But if you work through this process and you come up instead with contrast, then suddenly you say, it's interesting how we have different opinions here. And now you're standing back side by side, looking at different opinions, and you're saying, we have two different opinions here. It's interesting. You're concerned about the rights of the person being able to live together, and I'm thinking that I'm not sure if that's so healthy for society. In fact, my perspective from a biblical worldview is that God made man and woman so that when they get married, they should live together for life. That's kind of where I'm coming from, whereas you're more concerned about the individual rights of a person being able to stay together. You know, it's interesting that here we are standing back and we're looking at these two different views. That way you can have a conversation rather than a fight. And it's the same within a small group. It's the same sort of thing. Rather than disagreeing because you're panicking about some heretical idea that somebody's come up with, is you explore it by saying, I agree, this is in this way, build it bigger, and then contrast and say, this is the two different ideas we have here. How do we talk about this? That then removes the tension and the conflict and instead gives you a productive discussion because now everybody's on the same side looking at different opinions rather than seeking to defend their opinion and fighting and disagreeing. Any questions? Because we are at the end.
That's phenomenal. That's awesome. That is really
good. Isn't that beautiful?
Yeah, that's very good.
Well, let me tell you a little bit more about that because this is what I did. I said to myself, I'm going to try this. This next week, I'm not going to disagree with anything. I was shocked at how often I said I disagree. I was shocked. I do that all the time. And I thought, I can't do that. And then, and I would catch myself. I was traveling in a car with a friend of mine. And he was telling me about his thesis and something in his thesis or whatever. And I said, I disagree. And I saw the guy, you know, starting to tense up. And I thought, oh, I can't say that, I said. I'm not allowed to say I disagree. I have to agree with you. I said, I'm doing this thing with, I'm learning how this concept. And I have to agree, build, and contrast. I'm telling him, you know, what the process I'm going through in my mind, right? I'm telling him, I said, so I have to agree with you. What do I agree with? And I thought, oh, I know what I agree with. I agree with this. And this part I agree with. And as soon as I got there, that guy, the conversation, there was no conflict. He was so excited. He said, yes, that's what I'm talking about. We have this here. And we went on a little bit. And then I came into my contrast where we're talking about it. And it just flowed in the conversation. Rather than fighting, we were having a conversation where he was comfortable. And I'm sitting there going, my mouth is dropping open, saying, this is amazing. This is magic. This is magic. Yeah.
That's fantastic because you expose me as a fighter, not a conversation But could you? It sounds easier to say than actually practice. So could you help me to get closer than that wonderful conversation maker, other than the lounge fighter? Because it's against my human nature. I have not been that way.
Okay, so the question is this, is how can I move to be more of a conversationalist than a fighter? Because that's my nature, is to be a fighter. And I would suggest to you that the best way is to buy this book and to read it and what language do you want it in, right? It's in many languages. So grab it and read it and then take one of these things. I would start with this ABC because I found that really easy to do, to take it and try it. You try one of these tools. right? You try to do that, or try the start with heart and say, okay, anytime I have an emotion, I'm going to write down what my emotion is this week, and I'm just going to try to make myself aware, because the quicker I'm aware that my emotions are building, the better I will be able to step back, control it, understand it, and then deal with it so that I'm under control, and then I will be in a position where I can help others be safe as well. So those are, I mean, those sort of things are all in the book, and they detail it about how to work this through. And just take one at a time. Just take one at a time and celebrate the little victories. Like when I did that with that fellow, and I said I disagree, and then I went to agree, I celebrated that. After I went, I said, this is amazing. That was great. I did great, right? Next 10 times, maybe I didn't, but I did that great that time. So, yeah. All right. Thank you very much. Greatly appreciate that.